Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined today for a discussion of Godzilla 2014 by the King of Monsters, JB.
Hello.
And his squire, Adam Risky.
Squire? I'm not going to tell you my opinion on Godzilla or even say Godzilla until about an hour, 15 minutes in.
That sounds like a good plan. We're going to talk briefly spoiler-free about Godzilla and then get pretty quickly into spoilers.
We talk about 5 minutes spoiler-free. Yeah. It's very hard to talk
about. We'll talk about it when we get there. Anyway, so keep listening until we get to that point, and then if you want to turn it off, you can, and come back after you've seen the movie. Sounds like most people saw the movie this weekend. It was the biggest opening of the year, which surprised me.
Yeah, I didn't see that coming either.
We had no way of knowing which way it was going to go.
That I see movies at strange times because...
Empty?
Maybe 27 people.
Yeah.
Really?
Biggest opening day of the year, biggest opening weekend of the year with over $100 million. Anyway, you can find our website at fthismovie.net. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at fthismovie. Like our page on Facebook. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com or find us in the iTunes store by searching fthismovie. If you're a fan of the show, if you like the show, if you want to make the show even more popular, leave a review or a star rating. That would be great and help us out. But to find all of our past episodes, you have to go to fthismovie.net. Jay Bones, have you seen anything good lately?
Yes, the Chicago Film Critics Association has been doing a second Tuesday series of screenings at the local Elk Grove Village Theater.
Yeah.
Last month was River of No Return, which I had never seen, and a few days ago it was The Blues Brothers.
You didn't by any chance go out and buy River of No Return, did you?
No.
Okay.
Is it available?
I have no idea. If it was, I was going to borrow it from you. I want to see it.
No. I'm lazy. I had no knowledge of it, and it was this little obscure film. What if Otto Preminger made a Western?
Because he's I look a little something like Bridget Fonda. What? Point of No Return.
Oh, right.
Oh, okay.
Good call.
I don't even know if it's available on home video. It's very much worth your while. It paid big benefits. And obviously I've seen The Blues Brothers way too many times, but I hadn't seen it for a really long time in a theater. And once again, it was terrific. They showed the theatrical version, not the extra long Twilight Zone version that you see on home video.
But not the crazy super long Aykroyd version, right? Which wasn't shot, just written.
Right. Yeah. But when that film came out, I bought the paperback novelization, which was the rough draft of his script, and there's this whole thing.
Now you know about how the Bluesmobile got its power, right?
Which a little bit of that is in the extended version. But the biggest thing I remember in the novelization is there was a long sequence in a housing development where they didn't get all the musicians at the Holiday Inn. One of them was the night watchman at a housing development, and think about the rest of the film. Before that sequence is over, they destroy every house. Every house is either blown up or collapses or it explodes.
I like that.
Nice.
Too expensive to film. But it was crowded. I think they came close to selling out. It was very packed. Great film to see with an audience. Not that I had any doubt that it was a great film, but again, seeing it with an audience, every scene works. You're watching it and you're sort of like, remember when movies were like this?
Right.
And that the critic, whose name I don't remember, who presented the film, said, this film was a real gamble when it came out. It went over budget. It was a Saturday Night Live routine that they weren't even doing anymore because Aykroyd and Belushi had left the show. It was an R-rated comedy.
A musical.
It was a musical. But God, does it play. And there was a woman sitting behind me with the greatest laugh on earth, and she was enjoying the shit out of the movie. And maybe on a worse night it would have bothered me, but it added to the enjoyment. And at the end of the screening, I turned around and I said, I've seen this about 50 times in a movie theater. That was the most fun I've ever had, thanks to your laugh. And she was sitting there with her three older women pals, and she turned to me and she said, you should see me in a horror movie.
Ooh.
And her friend said, she gets really scared.
That's exactly the same situation I had with Godzilla. I was sitting behind three bros who were chewing skull and leaning over and talking to each other and going like chewing ice and just spitting into cups.
Could you smell the tobacco?
Well, yeah. I wasn't afraid. I know
that makes the movie more fun.
It was awesome.
It's in Smell-O-Vision.
Yeah.
And then the rest that I've seen lately, you two have also seen lately.
Right.
Because the slightly larger Chicago Film Critics Association Festival has been going on for the last week.
Right. I just want to say good job on them for that week, because it was a great week of programming, and it's really nice to have an excuse to go to the Music Box 5 times over 7 days.
And now they have to get better at exploiting it and advertising it, because their feeling last year was that it was in Rosemont, so that's what kept people from going. And you guys would agree, except for a couple things, it wasn't that well attended.
No, not really.
No, I mean, I don't know what they were
Which
expecting.
To me is a plus. I mean, I don't like how crowded they came together was. That was disturbing.
Right.
Animals was kind of claustrophobic. Full, basically. For me. It was really full. Yeah.
And we left and we saw the people lining up, but that's because it's Local Boy and it was the world premiere.
It wasn't the world premiere because it had shown in another festival, but it was the Chicago premiere, and a lot of those people worked on the movie. It was funny because people would show up. Did I tell you about the guy in line who said, "Do I have to line up if I have a ticket?" I said, "Yeah, I think so." And he goes, "Oh, I worked on the movie Animals." And I was like, "Oh, great." So he left, and then I looked for him and didn't see him again. And then 20 minutes into the movie, a car pulls up and he's in the car. Like, more than once in the movie, I was seeing people on screen and I would look in the audience like, "Oh, you're 2 rows in front of me."
I think I saw the same guy as you who you're
the guy who played a drug dealer was sitting 2 rows in front of us.
Which is not something that often happens.
He was really good, I thought, in his one little scene. I don't know, but that was crowded. Anyway.
You're writing a review for Animals, right?
I am.
Okay, because I'm curious. I didn't stay the whole time. It was more just because I was tired and I wasn't giving the movie its due.
Yeah.
But I was curious if the movie, because I saw your tweet about it, that you really liked it.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you were on board with it the whole way or if it like went up a notch.
I mean, I'm going to review it. I think I was mostly on board with it, and I say that as somebody who's not crazy about movies about drug addiction, because how many times can you watch people shoot up?
Oh, and how many times can you watch your life story on the screen? But
I thought it was well done throughout, and by the end, I just thought it all came together in a really good way. But cool. We'll see. I'm going to be writing reviews of all the stuff that I saw. I want to say it was like 15 or 16 movies in the last week.
I will agree with Adam that their choices were really good.
Yeah, I didn't see anything that I didn't like.
I have this pesky little thing called a full-time job, and
so do the rest of us, just for the record. But go ahead.
Every time I went, it took longer to get there than the movie was,
which irks that's me. That's rough.
And then you fly home, which makes you say,
why didn't I book an airplane ticket for the way here?
Why can't the road work? Why can't the road do what the road was built to do? But the 4 screenings I went to, great choices.
Yeah.
Even if I don't think it's the greatest film I've ever seen, I know there was some, not controversy, but I think the audience was divided on Obvious Child.
Yeah.
But
Smart and stupid.
If I have this little film that does 2 things really well, I'll take that over a bigger film that does nothing well.
I don't want to talk to it because I don't want to step on your reviews, which I'm sure will probably echo a lot of the same things that I would say. But the two ones that really stuck out for me were They Came Together, which is the best spoof that I can remember seeing since, like, The Naked Gun 2.5. It's just really good, and it's better than The Naked Gun 2.5. And it's just been a real dearth of good
It deserves
spoofs.
A wider release, because it does something that's really difficult. It is a parody, but not in that obnoxious date movie, epic movie, blech, way.
No, those aren't parodies.
It exists as a thing where we're following the narrative.
Sure.
Not completely, are invested in the two leads because they're delightful and they have a lot of chemistry, and as a parody of what it's trying to be, and that's very difficult to do.
Correct. Yeah, and Obvious Child, I just really liked. It was touching and sweet and very funny, and I was not familiar with Jenny Slate beforehand, except for that she was on SNL and got fired from SNL, but I'm a fan for life now. It's how one movie can turn you completely onto a performer.
Terrific performance in Obvious Child, and the narrative goes in unexpected places, I thought, because I think all of us were waiting for something to happen, and it didn't.
Right. Yeah.
But the other thing I liked is not only is the dialogue clever, but in a lot of cases, the way the actors put the dialogue over, that it's in the delivery, that I thought it was well written.
Patrick, didn't you say you had a crush on Gabby Hoffman at one point in time?
Long time ago, yeah.
Why is one half of her face 32 and one half of her face 52?
I don't know. She's been getting a ton of work lately, though.
Yeah,
I thought she was good in Obvious
there's
Child.
I thought so too, and I just thought it was jarring. It's like one half of her face got all like the smoking aging, and the other half didn't.
You brought up Gabby Hoffman on the way home from the screening. My wife and I were talking about this, and we were specifically talking about her performance and her character. In a more conventional film, you'd have the big scene where Gabby Hoffman reads out the Jenny Slate character for not giving as much back. You know, sure, we've seen that scene 100 times. Yeah. I give and I give and I give.
Right.
And I give this film so much credit for not having that scene because her character is just the nicest, most giving person you've ever met. She's completely supportive of her friend. And there are people like that.
Yeah. Yep.
So why in movies does that person always have this little monologue where they suddenly turn selfish for 5 minutes?
Because they want you to know that they're that person.
Well, we all have these rules for what we want movies to tell us, even if it's not the way the world works. Go back to The Wolf of Wall Street, where everybody's upset that he doesn't get a comeuppance at the end. That's because he didn't get a comeuppance in life. That guy is still a success. He's allowed to be a rich man. People like him are allowed to be rich men, but we go to the movies to see this reflection of what we think the world should be like, and therefore selfish people should be told that they are selfish by their friends.
And actually, the Gabby Hoffman character does have a scene that makes her slightly less sympathetic. At one point, it's kind of a monologue about how awful men are. And the other best friend says, "You just melted my boner." So she's certainly not a saint,
right?
But presented far more realistically than people are in more conventional movies.
Yes, A24. Telling you, they do good work.
Everything I've seen from them, it's like, who's quality control at A24?
I haven't seen Annapurna yet, but Annapurna's on
those
fire
are the two
too.
That are really
I like Open Road. Okay. They did like End of Watch.
I don't know. They're brand enough.
Locke got terrific reviews, and obviously, I won't give it away. But certainly, as an experiment in cinema, not unlike Rope, it would be worth seeing for just that reason.
I won't do too much. What have I seen lately? Because I'm going to be reviewing all those movies. But I will echo what you guys said and just say it was a great festival. I liked everything in varying degrees. There was nothing that I saw that I thought, oh, I'm upset that I didn't see that. Or, I'm upset that I saw that. It wasted my time or something. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the movies you guys should look for as they come out later this year, hopefully. And it's just really nice. I mean, I didn't go and watch trailers for any of the movies that were playing. I barely even read plot descriptions because it's one of the few times I can have the experience of sitting down and knowing literally nothing about a movie and just watching what happens.
And sometimes the plot descriptions don't work because I was offered free tickets last year to every screening, read the plot summaries, and said, none of this interests me. And then for the coming week, Patrick reviewed all the films, and I was like, what the hell was I thinking?
Yeah.
And that became my on-demand guide for the next 6 months.
Yeah,
yeah, they're at least movies you're going to have an opinion on, which is just what I go to the movies for, because I don't care if I don't like something. I would just want to have an opinion about it. I don't want
to
be completely
or to be happy
in
to have
middle.
Seen it. Just, yeah, you know, that showed me something.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
What that reminds me of is my wife and I go to the movies together, and obviously after the movie we like to talk. And there's nothing more numbing than a film.
Right.
You get out of it, there's nothing to say. Yep. And by this is our segue.
No, not yet. We haven't segued yet. Adam has to do what he's seen lately.
Yeah, what the fuck, man? Because
he saw some new stuff.
Sorry.
But we'll go back to your
perfect,
I understand
perfect segue.
I know.
I thought you were going to pull out the segue that you were going to give me that you haven't been using.
But that's, by the way, that's the worst. When I have that reaction to a movie and I know we're doing a podcast on it, it's like, well, I got nothing to say. How do I fail an hour? Anyway, Adam, have you seen anything good lately?
I saw Chef. I don't want to talk too much about it because I'm writing a review, but I'll just say it's good. It's not great. It's
how many Iron Men are in it?
One.
How many elves?
None.
How many Zathuras?
Jumanji?
Who directed that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Favre oh my Zathura. God.
Supposedly, he started thinking about making Chef while he was making Zathura because that's when he started to feel in a cage
really?
Of his own doing. But
he was caged on Zathura?
Yeah.
I want to see Zathura without Favreau's hands tied.
Oh, no.
Favreau's off the leash. Yeah, let's get the unadulterated Zathura. No more compromises.
Yeah, yeah. So
I would have assumed it was during Iron Man 2.
Probably. Cowboys and Aliens, I'm sure, didn't help.
There you go. Yeah. There's an example. There's the movie where I know we're doing a podcast on it, and I got nothing.
Yeah. I still like Cowboys and Aliens.
Okay. I don't know why, but that's fine. So, Chef is not as good as Swingers. It's better than Made, gives you a basis of comparison. It's slight, but it's enjoyable, and it's worth seeing in the theater just because the cinematography and location work is so good.
Cool.
That I think it's worth watching.
I'm hoping it opens a little bit wider.
Yeah, yeah. I think it will. It's very commercial.
Yeah.
Favreau as an actor brings so much to the party. I think I may have said this before. The only thing that's worth anything in that breakup movie is that one scene.
Couples retreat?
No.
Okay.
The breakup.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
There's one scene between him and Vaughn.
I don't even remember it.
Where he offers to kill the guy.
Okay.
And they go back and forth for 4 minutes. It's the only scene that's worth anything.
I was thinking of Four Christmases, where he is also the only thing worth watching, where he's playing some board game with his wife. Have you seen Four Christmases?
Yeah,
a lot. And I'm not saying he's a bad director, but
yeah,
you need to act more, son.
Right. Yeah, yeah. He's a better writer and actor than director, I would say. And then the other thing I saw was Palo Alto. I had a 3-movie day in Evanston on Friday, and
I believe you tweeted about it.
I did. I couldn't keep my eyes open by the time. Like, seriously, I almost died on the way home.
There's another reason that you couldn't keep your eyes open, but we'll talk about that in a second.
Oh, for sure. I don't know what that is, but we'll find out. So,
were you high?
No, I wish.
Were you on drugs?
I was on the crack cocaine?
Were you on the drugs?
I was on the drugs.
Los drogas?
I had a double scoop of Edie's ice cream.
Well, that'll do it.
Yeah. No, I liked Palo Alto, but I said this in reference to the Bling Ring. This isn't a Sofia Coppola movie. This is Gia Coppola. It's like Sofia Coppola's niece and Francis Ford Coppola's granddaughter. I feel like they just make movies to show at their family outings, and this is...
They
like,
kind of do, actually. I remember an interview with Coppola where he almost talked about that. They go make art, and then they all get together and present it.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like when you see Dan in real life, and you're like, there's a fucking family talent show? It's like what the Coppolas are doing, right. And it's good. I mean, like, she probably won this year's Coppola Award. I mean, I liked Palo Alto a lot. It's not as good as like a Sofia Coppola thing, but like you're watching it and you're thinking to yourself, this is a director who has the potential of making a great movie one day. And that was really exciting. And she even coaxed a really good performance out of Emma Roberts, of all people.
Really?
She's great in it.
I did not think she had that in her.
She does. Yeah. And there's a guy named Jack Kilmer, who's the son of Val Kilmer, who's another one of the teenagers. And he's really good. And he looks like a mix of Val Kilmer having a baby with River Phoenix. He's got that kind of My Own Private Kilmer thing going on. And I really liked it. It's based on a series of short stories by James Franco. It makes me want to read the James Franco book, which is unbelievable. I mean, I think you're really going down a rabbit hole if you want to read James Franco.
That alone is high praise.
Made me want to read a book by James Franco. Adam Risky up this movie.
Exactly. I love ennui in movies, and this is all ennui. So let me just put it this way. To wrap up on Palo Alto, you know you're getting old when you're the guy that you grew up on with movies, so somebody like James Franco, who I've been watching since Freaks and Geeks, is now the pervert hitting on the high school students.
Oh, yeah.
So that made me feel a little bit old. But one thing I mentioned to GB before you came here was, it reminds me of if you took like a Sofia Coppola movie and a Larry Clark movie and made it 50% more hopeful.
All right.
So it's worth watching. It's good.
All right.
Yeah.
And if you're familiar with the work of both of them, that's actually a really accurate description.
I have to see the movie, but I can imagine that movie. I'm not a Larry Clark fan. Mm-mm. So we're going to talk about Godzilla again, spoiler free for a few minutes.
About 5 minutes.
Because there's a big thing in the movie that I consider a spoiler, but everybody knew it ahead of time based on, there were headlines on all these movie sites, and it had been ruined for me, but it would have been a neat surprise. So I'm not going to talk about it.
I'm not sure if it was ruined for me.
Okay.
I'm not sure I know what you guys are talking
about. Well, we'll talk about it when we get to spoilers, but I want to avoid mentioning it. So we'll just give some initial impressions. I will say the one good thing about this Godzilla movie coming out is that now I have spent the weekend watching Godzilla movies with my kid. And it's been a ton of fun. There's several on Netflix Instant, and Heath Holland wrote a piece last week about a couple of them, and it made me excited to watch them, so I sat down with Charlie, and we've watched nothing but Godzilla movies this weekend.
And what is his opinion of the big guy?
He's annoyed when Godzilla's not on screen, so I'm not taking him to see Godzilla 2014. But those movies, you know, there's a lot of exposition and talking. We haven't watched, like, the original Godzilla, because that's not going to be his speed, but the fun kind of 60s and 70s ones. So, you know, he kind of wants to fast forward to the last half hour where Godzilla actually fights. But he's been enjoying them, and he has been playing with a Godzilla toy, and so that's been fun. So, J-Bones, your initial impressions of Godzilla 2014.
This inspired one of the biggest arguments in the car.
Interesting.
In recent memory.
Wow.
And my wife concluded that I don't like to be challenged.
Okay.
But I think as we talked it out at Smashburger, I think what I was saying became clearer. And
that's where you have to go after you see Godzilla.
Pretty much, yeah.
You can't go to Pussy Burger.
No, you can't.
Pussy Burger stops the conversation dead every time.
Where is the closest Pussy Burger?
I can't even tell you. I thought it was something he invented. If it's real, I'm there.
Ladies, I eat.
Okay. Anyway, sorry.
I'm dying to hear what you guys thought of it.
Okay. We don't know what you thought of it.
I hated it.
Okay.
Hated it. For a couple different reasons. There's one shot I like. And driving around this morning, I even realized that shot doesn't work. Because there's several things in the movie that make no sense,
okay,
and that's among them. I understand that other people were entertained by it. I think I might be in the minority. I hated it.
Adam?
I am going to have to disagree with you a little bit, because there are two things that I liked in it, and there are 4,000 things I fucking hated in it.
Okay.
Wow.
The 4,000 things, I'm clearly letting color my opinion.
This movie made me more angry than most movies do.
I did not know coming into this podcast what it was going to be like, because I didn't love the movie. I think I liked it better than both of you, but I didn't love it.
Which my wife predicted, by the way.
And I thought that I was going to be the one being the shithead. Like, but no, you guys, it's not that good.
No.
So I never know what to expect.
Literally 20 minutes in, I thought to myself, because there was nothing on the screen to keep me occupied, I am just going to be the biggest fucking asshole.
Well, but the thing is that people are loving it, and that's fine. Every time one of these movies comes out, not just a big summer movie, but sort of a summer movie that appeals to a certain kind of person, whether it's a comic book movie or whatever, I keep hoping, like, well, this will be the one that's not polarizing, right? We can all either say, like, it's good, or who cares, whatever. Any of those reactions I would be fine with. Yeah. But again, Godzilla is, I loved it, best summer movie I've seen in a long time, and I hated it. So, once again, this is polarizing.
I watched it twice to confirm that
you saw it twice?
I saw it twice.
Oh my god.
I saw it Friday night, and I really was having a tough time with
this. This is the F this movie equivalent of you as a woman.
Yeah.
Sleeping with someone, taking one for the team, as they call it.
Well,
you have just slept with an ugly man. I knew you were gonna bring that up. In the world of movie criticism, you have just turned into a woman and slept with an ugly man.
If I wasn't on the podcast for this movie, I would not have watched it a second time.
Again, you took one for the team.
I want to be fair.
I thought to myself that maybe I do need to see it again, because I would, and I don't think I will, but I really was wondering if my reactions, the way that I feel about it, had anything to do with my expectations going in.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was going to be one thing, and it pretty much isn't. And so I felt like, well, I probably need to see it again for the movie that it is, not the movie that I thought it was going to be.
I will admit that maybe 30% of my reaction was my expectations dashed.
Right.
And I understand. It there's no way it can be my fantasy Godzilla film. But as Adam alluded to, there is so much going on in this film that's wrongheaded, that makes no sense, that the most cardinal sin is generic and uninteresting.
My issue with it was I felt like I was in the hands of a filmmaker who did not care about my entertainment. And I felt like Gareth Edwards is wrongheaded in so many of his decisions for how he shoots certain things, for choices that he made about reveals.
Well, it's interesting that you haven't seen Monsters, because before we recorded you said you were going to see it. I have seen Monsters. I don't love Monsters. I think it's interesting, but it doesn't work for me. And a lot of what he does in Monsters, he carries over to Godzilla. And I actually think it works better in Monsters.
Yeah. Well, he did that because he had no budget in Monsters.
Right.
Where he had $160 million to work with in Godzilla.
Right.
Yet, this is one major... I have about three major criticisms. I'm just going to throw the first one out there right now.
Is there any kind of spoiler in it?
No.
Okay.
It's way too dark. Everything is...
Lit? Yeah.
Yeah, everything is at night. Everything is rainy. Everything is overcast.
And the Roland Emmerich Godzilla did the same thing.
But there's so many Godzilla movies to cull from where they shoot fight scenes in the daylight. It's like watching...
But those look fake.
All right.
But that's really the reason. I really think it's a way to disguise the effects.
The special effects, I thought, were good, though. Yes. Like, I don't know what there is to disguise.
The thing I kept saying was... And this became part of this argument. I have come here to see Godzilla.
Yes.
Okay. Let's.
And now you're going. No, I'm not going to.
Okay.
You're going to endeavor to not show me Godzilla, even when you're showing me Godzilla.
And when you turn the fucking lights off, like it's like driving for 2 hours in rainy weather. You're not happy after driving in 2 hours in rainy weather.
Can you imagine if we had seen it in 3D?
I saw it in 3D.
Oh my God!
I saw it in fucking IMAX 3D.
Wow.
Yeah, because I wasn't wearing the sunglasses, and I thought it was dark.
The darkening glasses. Let's get into spoilers, and I apologize for those of you who haven't seen it but wish to listen for.
Don't see it. If you haven't seen it, don't.
You should see it so you have an opinion on it.
Exactly.
I will make a video of me playing with some of my Godzilla toys for 5 minutes. That'll be more entertaining. But man,
there are a lot of
now I'm angry
Godzilla movies on Netflix Instant right now that are very entertaining. You can watch those. But there's a major thing in the movie that to me is a spoiler, and I don't want to spoil it for other people, even though it was spoiled for me.
Can I just say one thing very quickly?
Yes.
Watching the film, the words of Heath Holland wafted into my brain. Earlier this week, he was opining on a Transformers cartoon.
Yes.
And I know nothing about the Transformers as a toy, as a cartoon, as a film franchise. But he said the cartoon was about the robots.
Right.
And then when they made the Michael Bay films, suddenly it was about human beings with the robots in the background.
Right.
And I thought the exact same thing about Godzilla. I used to enjoy Godzilla films that were about an enormous whale lizard and his adventures, and now, and there's shots in this new one where literally it's the background for two people talking.
Because
there's a lot I have to say.
What he did in Monsters. But anyway, so let's get into spoilers. If you haven't seen the movie, stop listening. Or if you don't
spoiler
care to have
number
things,
one, the movie's bad.
Spoiled for you. You can continue to listen. So here's the thing that was spoiled for me a few weeks ago. Via just headlines, because I deliberately avoided reading articles and whatever, but, you know, a Badass Digest or a Slash Film or whatever, in the headline writes something like, there's more than one monster in Godzilla. Which bummed me out so hard, because that was not in any of the trailers, and
we know trailers are famous for giving things away, and I will hand them this. That was very clever, because when I saw the movie, and they're starting to find the thing, you think it's going to be Godzilla,
right?
And it's not, and that's great. I'll hand them that. If you didn't know going in, that's good, unless you were expecting to see Godzilla, in which case it would be another disappointment.
Here's the problem for me, because that gets spoiled for me and I'm bummed out. But then in my head, I think, and this is just specific to me. This isn't necessarily the movie's problem. In my head, I think, oh, neat, there's multiple monsters. That means this is going to be a movie in which Godzilla fights monsters instead of being the Roland Emmerich movie where Godzilla attacks and we have to shoot and kill him. Here's the one thing that this movie did that I really liked. Godzilla's the good guy.
Yeah.
And he has to fight other monsters and save the city. That's great, because I didn't want another... We go to see Godzilla for Godzilla, because we love Godzilla. We don't go for the Roland Emmerich one, where our goal is to murder Godzilla and kill him. Mm-hmm. That sucks. So making him the hero, making him a good guy, great.
No, in this Western, everyone's trying to kill John Wayne and bury him dead.
So knowing that he was going to fight monsters was exciting to me. But then the way that it's revealed, I thought, oh, that doesn't work as well. And again, we're coming at it from two different points of view. For you, it's neat. You think it's Godzilla. It's not. Ooh, a different monster. For me, I wanted Godzilla, Godzilla, Godzilla. And then, holy shit, another monster that now Godzilla has to fight. That would have been such a fun surprise.
Right. And my surprise was quickly abated by the fact that the minute they reveal what it is, which is the monster from the end of Cloverfield.
Yeah.
Now I gotta wait even longer to see Godzilla. Now let's address the 800-pound dinosaur
in the room.
You have to wait way too long to see Godzilla. And I'm not the only person to bring this up. Slate this morning published an article about how long you have to wait compared to other Godzilla films. And then they further did another chart. Did you guys read this?
No.
Mm-mm.
Where they did it by percent of running time. Okay. Because the counter-argument was, well, in all those
films... Do people
films,
have nothing better to do with their time?
No, like, this was entertaining.
There's no lint left in their belly button.
Here's my point. That people were saying, well, that goes back to the old school. That the old school, you'd see a footprint and then a claw. And then Clive Barker talks about this in Fear in the Dark.
Right.
No, in the original Godzilla, it's 22 minutes.
Yeah.
All right, I got two things to say to that. The first one is, I'm overseeing the footprint. I'm overseeing the crater. Because it looks like a footprint in a crater to me. You could dig a hole in the fucking ground. I could climb up in a tree and guess what it looks like? It looks like a hole in the ground. I don't care. I don't care if you put it in the shape of a foot. It looks like a hole in the ground that's in the shape of the foot. That's one thing. The other thing is, they keep thinking like it's showing you Godzilla by showing you the leg. You know what the leg looks like, or the cocoon looks like? It looks like a piece of poo or a rock.
A tree trunk.
I don't fucking care. Show me its face.
And this is another part of this spousal argument, where I was suggesting that this Gareth gentleman had never seen Jaws. And Jaws isn't the first.
God,
Jaws is not the first movie to do this, but you hand the audience what they want to see at the beginning. And if you do that, that goes a pretty long way, and then you can wait. She suggested that in the opening credits, mm-hmm. when we see that risible premise that nuclear testing, really, was trying to kill these creatures, that at one point you see the scaly back in the fake footage,
yeah.
and that was their way of doing that. Mm. But again, that's not enough Godzilla. It's real simple. In the original Godzilla, Godzilla attacks a boat. And you don't see the whole thing, and you just see little flashes, but Godzilla attacks a boat, and then nobody knows what attacks a boat, and then we go on from there. You need Godzilla at the beginning of this movie. Is there anyone who's going into this movie? What is this Godzilla? Everybody knows what Godzilla is.
I'm glad you brought up Jaws because Gareth Edwards. I'm so being careful not to say Gareth
it's
Evans
hard not
because
to confuse the
Gareth time. Evans love 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 Gareth Edwards. No no no.
Yeah.
All right. Gareth Edwards.
One of them needs to change their name.
Has been bending over backwards in reviews or interviews saying that Jaws was a huge inspiration, and it's all over this movie, and I got a lot of things to say about it, but the point I'm trying to make right off the top is that he is so... Alright. This movie is like...
This is the angry podcast.
This movie is like watching... Alright, say you had the end of Jaws, right? And instead of seeing the shark eat Quint, you're watching Ellen Brody watch
Spoilers
it from the beach. Or watch it on a fucking TV in a bar. All right. If you're going to show 20% of a goddamn monster fight on a TV in a bar or in a hospital, at least have it on a big TV.
I had a problem with how long the fight was at the end because I didn't think it was long enough.
It wasn't.
Because I was enjoying it a lot. And then
it's the best stuff in the movie.
And then my wife says there were plenty of monsters fighting for her that I do not represent the average audience member because I love monster movies and I like to watch Godzilla fight. I will say this. We're in spoilers now, right?
Yep.
There was one shot in the film that almost made the whole thing worthwhile. I bet if the two of you thought about it, you can think what that shot was. At one point, our hero, you know, Godzilla, the one they keep Aaron not Taylor Johnson. Showing it to us, takes one of the creatures, grabs its head, and I can only describe it as vomits, power boots, radiation down his gullet, until literally you can see the head detaching, and I've never seen this before.
No, that's the best shot in the movie.
Oh, it really
was the
is.
Atomic kiss.
Super kick-ass.
Until I started to think about it this morning.
No. It's the only thing I'm holding on to, John.
Oh, no. You know what? I would have gotten my money's worth if I come into the theater and they'd say, look, it's shitty, but look at this, and showed me that one shot.
Yeah.
I would have gone home happy. I would have got 2.5 hours of my life back. If the two Cloverfield creatures are shown to love radiation and eat radiation, and it's what makes them live, how on earth would that kill them? It would energize them.
Yeah.
The film completely negates its own premise. Oh, but this is super strong. No! Thank you for an hour and a half, you show them eating atomic bombs to live!
I would think it would have...
You would think you'd say, thank you, sir, may I have another.
Yeah, that's true.
Somehow it must have contributed to the head coming off.
It's just too much food at once.
I think that's what it is. Is that what it means?
Yeah,
he's full.
It's like it's full.
He overate.
It had a food baby. Like the other one had a baby baby. This one had a food baby.
While I'm at it.
His head
At
fell
one
off.
Point, Kent Watanabe, who's given nothing in this film to do but stand there and say things like everyone else in the film.
But people get bust their nut because he says Gojira. They're like, he's Japanese, and he said Gojira, so this movie works.
I don't think it works. I did enjoy the fact that that's how they pay homage to that. But David Strathairn stands around and says things. And I'm glad all these people got a big paycheck.
Yes.
But
why can't David Strathairn's character be a Paul Gleason character, where he's just got some kind of character shading, where he's just an asshole or something like that?
Well, in a way, he is.
Everything's monotonous. Everything's monotone.
It is monotonous, although later...
Not monotonous. Everything's monotone.
Later and I, Jan agreed that for a fairly humorless outing, this is a grim slog. There's no comic relief.
Yes. That weird Elvis joke.
That the accidental comic relief is... David Strathairn is trying to keep this contained, and no one can find out about it. And then suddenly, on like CNN, there's footage of the monsters.
Right.
And we cut to Strathairn, and he goes, well, the cat's out of the bag.
Yeah.
Now here's our second directive, to keep people safe.
Okay.
Yeah. One more thing.
Yeah.
Kent Watanabe.
Ken.
He carries around a pocket watch.
Right.
That was his father's.
Right.
And his father died in Hiroshima.
Which then a character has to say.
That
he gives a date.
Right.
And we can all say, yes, I know what you're referring
because
to.
Because Strathairn was a history
Strathairn
student.
Has to go, Hiroshima.
That makes Kent Watanabe at least 74 years old. My wife did the math.
Okay.
That it makes no sense.
I thought it was when...
He said my father gave it
to
me.
Yeah.
He doesn't say my father had it. In 1945, maybe it was from his grandfather given to his father to him. Whatever. The point is, it's not a deal breaker.
But if Watanabe... Oh, no, it is a deal breaker. It shows you what contempt they have for the audience. If Watanabe's father died in Hiroshima...
Which is not established.
No, he says that.
No.
Mm-mm. It's hinted, I guess.
Yeah.
But...
I don't think he says my father died at Hiroshima.
Okay, then my bad.
I don't think. I could be wrong. Somebody listening to this is going to say, no, he very clearly does say
you
that.
You would have had to have the child before you died.
Yeah.
And the math doesn't work.
I assumed it was something passed down to him, but I only thought about it
from
4 seconds.
From somebody's butt.
Right, but to pass it down, you have to have a child that you're the father of, and you can only father a child when you're still alive.
What if his grandfather had it, gave it to his dad, who then gave it to him? You know what I mean? That's whatever. It doesn't matter.
His dad would have had to have them, though.
Right. It goes back to the same
thing. I don't
know. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I'm glad they said the Hiroshima thing, though, because my date was like, did it stop when they integrated the schools?
Okay, two things. One, yes, everyone is monotone and...
Except for Cranston.
I'm glad that there aren't necessarily Paul Gleason characters, because then you're talking about a Michael Bay movie, or you're talking about the Roland Emmerich Godzilla.
Okay.
because then you have characters that exist just to be stupid, just to be wrong, and I'm tired of that, and it's annoying. At the same time, you're right. None of the characters have any shading. We can only identify people by their station. He's the general. He's the quote-unquote hero. She's the wife. And you have a movie with all of these really good actors, and it's neat to go see a summer blockbuster that has Bryan Cranston and Elizabeth Olsen and
Julia Binoche.
And Julia Binoche and Sally Hawkins and all these great people. And then no one does anything. I mean, nothing. No one gives a performance. Cranston comes the closest.
The only thing I can...
He does his best.
Yeah, I mean, like, Cranston has urgency.
Right.
It might be because of the advertising, but I thought, I stupidly thought that Cranston would be in more of it.
Right.
Kind of like I expected Godzilla to be in more of it. When they zipped up his body bag, spoiler alert, I'm like, what?
Yeah, because he dies before I feel like Godzilla even shows up.
I believe he does.
Because Jan pointed out that in movies, we love the guy who's right.
Right.
So to let Cranston live as this character who everyone thinks he's crazy and he's vindicated, why was that decision made on a narrative level?
It's like
I think you need that character to be running around the rest of the film.
Or make his death matter or mean anything. Yeah, like, that was my issue with it more than that.
Well, Gareth Edwards almost... Because I feel like, of the humans, that Bryan Cranston is maybe the only one who has, like, a full character arc. Because he's wrong, he's trying... One big glaring error to me is, he goes into the quarantine zone, but he waits 15 years to go to the quarantine zone. It's like, why would he wait? This guy's, like, obsessed with it. Why would he wait 15 years?
Well, because he has to wait for his son to grow up.
He has to wait for charisma to grow up. Because what the fuck, man?
He has to wait for his son to become hero bait.
And his name is Ford Brody. It's like, why don't you just name him fucking, like, Indiana Jaws?
Another character has a name that is something,
Ellie
too.
Brody.
No, there's another one, though, that's another movie reference.
Oh, God.
I don't remember what it is.
Yeah, go masturbate, Gareth Edwards.
Yeah, there's another one that's a movie reference.
Yeah, So, I mean, yeah, he's the only one who has an arc, so I think he's crazy, he's proven right that he's not crazy, he then has to die, because that's all the imagination that they have for his character.
And we couldn't have two people running around the film that you could mistake for a hero, because once Cranston dies, this film bends over backwards to put Ford in every conceivable place that he needs to be.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous. It's like the monsters are trailing him. Now, I'm sorry, you're going to have to go to Honolulu first so you can be trapped on that train with the little boy.
He's the only one that can arm the bomb or disarm the bomb because there's no electricity.
And speaking of dramatic structure, how odd that it's set up that he's the only one who can do it, and he winds up not doing it.
Well, that's one of the things that's fascinating about this
movie. I kind
of
like when they set up that someone can do something, and then they do.
But do we need another scene? See, this is the thing. This movie is frustrating to me, because we're reacting to choices that are very deliberate, and we're saying we don't like those choices. That doesn't necessarily make them bad choices, some of the things.
Yeah, they do.
No, I don't think they do.
That's fine.
But I think there are other things that make the movie not work. Like all the characters being one note, like, or no note, actually.
That it's generic. It's what I said about The Obvious Child in reverse. All this movie does is give us movie.
The structure doesn't work. There's not really a story that's being told. And so he's going out of his way to sort of do an anti-blockbuster at times. Because we don't need another scene of Aaron Johnson successfully disarming the bomb with 30 seconds left on the clock. We don't. But the fact that it detonates also means nothing. So all it is, well, hey, the bomb went off. That doesn't usually happen in movies. And credits. There's no payoff to it. It's just, okay, it's a little bit different. And same with Godzilla, the withholding. And I wouldn't necessarily mind that. Like, you guys are talking about Jaws. He's clearly making choices, and I wouldn't even mind that he delays showing us Godzilla, if when he did, the payoff was more worth it. And he keeps making the decision to cut away from the fights.
It's
the
first blue balls.
Right. And it's and 5 seconds and then they cut away. And I just, I don't like that choice.
I don't either.
Right. Halfway through the film, I was envisioning someone going into the film with a stopwatch. And if Godzilla winds up being in less than 50% of Godzilla, maybe there's a class action lawsuit that's possible.
I just, we need to talk about the character's relationship to Godzilla because I don't understand it. But a lot of people, I think, are gonna champion that choice as being brave, that he keeps cutting away from the action.
It's wrong.
Or that it's this weird background thing. Yeah. And I believe he has claimed it's a way of teasing us so that the fight at the end really pays off. But I'm with you in that if that's going to be the case, then that fight needs to be three times as long.
Thank you. Thank you.
Because all I remember about it was whip with the tail, building falls down, atomic kiss. That's all I remember. Like those
well,
are
he
like
kills the other one, and I couldn't even totally tell you how
it was. The tail was the first one, and then blowing into the other one's mouth,
which was, that was
cool.
Great.
Yeah,
there are certain shots that are really cool,
and that's why I don't hate the movie, because I think every once in a while there's a moment where I'm like, oh boy, he really got that thing right. Even if it's just Godzilla coming out and roaring the loudest fucking thing you've ever heard.
And I'm not against going against genre conventions, but there's a point where he's doing the anti-epic, and then there's a point where it's just batshit crazy. Indulge me for a second. In the movie version of A Chorus Line,
I've never seen it,
which is awful, there's a character singing and dancing, and it's one of the more entertaining things you'll see, certainly in that film. And the director, who I think was Richard Attenborough, cuts away
John Hamm
from the guy who's singing and dancing to show us a girl in a dressing room, sort of moon-faced, wistfully looking out the window. And at that point, I stand up in the theater and I go, no!
Right.
This is a musical! And I'm here to watch people sing and dance. And that's my reaction in this. Oh, he cut away from the action. How clever. No! I'm here to see Godzilla.
I just think you still have to make a movie that succeeds while doing that. Like, if you're going to do that, that's fine. Even if it doesn't give me what I wanted, which was to see Godzilla fight, your movie still needs to structurally make sense. It needs to have characters that make sense. You can only play that game if you still work as a movie. And that's really hard to do, and I don't think he does it.
And what I compared it to during this epic argument was earlier pieces of wisdom from our own Patrick Bromley, the summer that Transformers came out. And everyone loved Transformers. And Patrick was the only voice against. And it came to pass that a lot of people who knew Patrick was in the movies wanted his opinion. And you would tell them, and they looked like you shit in their bed. And they said, what did you expect in a movie about giant fighting robots? And it's exactly this, that someone is going to say, it's a movie about Godzilla. What are you expecting? I'm expecting a good Godzilla movie.
Right.
Yeah, I think that with his choosing to cut away and showing something for 5 seconds, or showing something from a point of view of a human on the ground where they only get a fleeting glimpse on it, then they have to run to do something else, or it's shown on a television, he's really shooting himself in the foot of making a good, fun movie, because you could use, all right, you've got the Jaws. If you really want to be the Jaws guy and not reveal the monster for an hour, fine. But at that point, in that second hour, you got to take the Ghost Protocol formula, where you have the great have to have the great sandstorm chase. That's Honolulu. You have to have the great building thing, which escalates on top of that. That's Las Vegas. And then you have a great indoor garage thing, which is maybe not even topping the second one, but it's a different energy, and that's San Francisco.
And like you said,
I can direct this movie better than Gareth Edwards.
Most of the Vegas destruction we see on a television set.
Yes.
And then we see the aftermath. But I want to go back to yours.
I yelled out, oh, come on, when, like, I never
and it was
say
the second time he had seen it.
Say anything in a theater. I yelled out, oh, come on, when they cut away from the Vegas one.
I want to go back to your Jaws analogy, though, because I think it's really apt. If you're going to decide to do it this way, you need a foreground story that's as compelling as the three men in the boat who have been established as very unique, interesting, different characters, and the drama that erupts between them. In Godzilla, everyone's a cardboard cutout.
Yep.
And I've liked Aaron Johnson, whatever his name is, in other films, and here, I don't get it.
Elizabeth Olsen is a great actress.
And Marlene.
For her to take that part where she just plays the part of crying wife mm-hmm. is such an insult to all female actors in Hollywood. Even Jurassic Park, which I think is a great movie, and you could say it's lesser Jaws. I was invested in or cared about Alan Grant and the two kids trying to make their way across the park.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Everyone in that movie has a well-defined character.
There's a 5-minute stretch that I think almost works, and it's weird because what I think almost works and what kind of moved me emotionally in any way from this movie, and that's when the Japanese kid gets separated from his parents, and then Aaron Taylor Johnson has to become kind of the guardian of this kid for a little while.
For like half a scene.
First of all, that kid's a good actor, because I felt something when that kid was on screen. Second of which, that's like that's like the second most developed human arc in the movie.
and it's for 5 or 10 minutes, and then it's thrown away. He finds his parents. They're right there. Bye. They don't even thank him.
No, he doesn't at all. And I completely agree with you about the Elizabeth Olsen thing, because she is working overtime trying to find something to act in this movie.
Yeah.
And it's but she doesn't so have to act.
She's a nurse.
It's oh, I forgot.
She's a nurse. Didn't you see what she was wearing?
Oh, yeah. That's her job. Her job. It's done. That's your acting choice. But, you know,
she's a nurse.
All right. This segues to your discussion about Godzilla as the monster and as the conduit in this story.
Okay.
So before that segues into that, I want to talk about the Mutos or Motos or what are they?
Mutos.
Yeah. All right. M-U-T-O.
Okay. The M-U-T-Os.
Wait, let me interrupt you one last time.
Sure.
We get Strathern.
One last time.
I promise. We get Strathern saddled with their mobile, unidentified terrestrial objects.
Yeah.
And then the guy next to him says, well, they're not terrestrial anymore because the one flies. So why do they keep calling them Mutos?
Because it sounds stupid to be like, Mutos. What's up with the Mutos?
Jan suggested that was a tip of the hat to Mothra.
Oh.
That might be.
All right.
Selling it?
Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
So what I was going to say was those things.
They're not Mutos because one of them flies.
All right, the Mutos.
Well, one of them
are sympathetic because the Mutos
are just trying to get it on.
Are just trying to get it on and have a family and just go according to their own nature. And Godzilla has no motivation to help humans. I don't understand why he's helping them. Why he's supposed to be the savior? They bend over backwards saying that he is the savior. What motivation does he have to help humans? And what drive does he have other than they monster not like me to kill them?
The feeling was also, and again, it's really sketchy because that's most of the heavy lifting Watanabe has to do, that he was put on Earth to keep balance and his job is to. But again, you're correct. In fact, there's one shot where the female is walking away from the soldiers, and in her little egg sack, we can see all these glowing eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought one of the soldiers was going to shoot at the egg sack.
Wouldn't the radiation leak out then?
That's true. Although one of the things I did like was Aaron Johnson, whatever his name is, Ford's decision to torch the eggs later.
That's in 100 different movies.
But that does give you a reason for them to turn away from Godzilla and to attend to home. Yeah. It was something.
I guess.
I like the Muto design. I thought it, you know what it reminded me of? Was not even Cloverfield. It reminded me of the mist.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I thought, and there's one shot, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but it was in that scene where you were talking about where they're hiding on the bridge.
Yeah.
And there's the female that's walking underneath the bridge. There's a shot of her, like, biting something, and it looked practical, and it looked like the T-Rex practical effects in Jurassic Park, or, like, the more practical effects in The Mist, and I was really hoping that they would do more of that.
Well, apparently, it wasn't all CGI, that at some point, they did do some motion capture, which is why it has a little bit more of that rubber suitness than perhaps some other things, which I gave them a lot of credit for, because obviously we stayed through the end credits because I thought there was going to be an Easter egg.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of motion capture talent and rotoscope talent. So I think that was his way of trying to not make it look too CGI-ish.
Okay. I think Gareth Edwards is capable of making a good Godzilla movie. I think he shows in certain moments that he knows what to do to deliver, and I think there's an affection for Godzilla that does come through. My reaction to the movie is more pronounced, not as pronounced as you guys, but it's more pronounced because he didn't make the Godzilla movie that I wanted. But I also don't think this works as a movie. So this isn't just me saying, hey, it's not what I want it to be, therefore it's bad. Because I also think structurally, character-wise, and even sort of thematically, none of it really comes together. So I don't think it's a very good movie, even without being the Godzilla movie that I want. So he makes monsters, and monsters is so low budget that the monsters are always in the background. They're sort of these big CGI monsters in a jungle. But there's a human story going on in the front, and that's what we're following. And the monsters are just sort of this metaphor in the distance. And I don't love the movie, but sure, that kind of works. But that's because there's a human story to follow. Mm-hmm. And that I just think it's a miscalculation to try and do that same thing in a $200 million summer movie where this was a little indie, where droves of people are going to come see your movie, Godzilla. I think it's a mistake to try and just do it from the human's point of view. And that is, again, it's a choice. Every time we see the monsters, it's basically from the perspective of someone looking at it, yeah, which is a choice and might have worked. I just don't think it works here.
And one of the things my wife said during this epic argument that sort of did talk me down. Did she like
it or just not dislike it as much as you?
I believe the latter.
Okay.
That she said I was expecting a monster movie.
Right.
And it's not. And I'm disappointed. She was expecting.
But what is it?
She was expecting a mindless, epic summer blockbuster, yeah, and on that basis, it was a little better than what she was expecting.
Okay.
But talking about it with you two gentlemen makes me think that maybe there's something more deeper going on here in terms of the social zeitgeist. That maybe I'm going out on a limb here, but the Facebook generation, for whom everything revolves around me and what I did, and look where I am, and look what I did, and look what I'm doing, and here's what I'm thinking about, can only accept the movie that all of us were disappointed by this weekend, because in a way, that's what it is. It's not Godzilla. It was, I saw Godzilla. Yeah. I was trying to live my life, and then I got a selfie of myself with it. But it moved very fast, and now it's gone.
Yeah.
Could I be on to something here?
It's certainly possible.
The point of view thing, like, because it's interesting that you would talk about the selfie aspect, because everything is shot on, like, ground-level point of view,
right,
from a human perspective. There were certain parts, like, especially in the first viewing of it, where I thought people were standing up in rows ahead of me. Like, I thought they were standing.
Because there was so much shit in the foreground.
I couldn't believe it. And that, it's done so much. I think that's when it really clicked for me how much I appreciate Cloverfield. And I think Cloverfield is the best Godzilla movie made in decades.
But Cloverfield is a horror movie.
Yes. But if Jaws
I'm not disagreeing with you.
No, but what I'm going to say is Jaws is also a horror movie.
Yeah.
And if you're going to model Godzilla after Jaws, then you need to make Godzilla a horror movie.
But again, I appreciate that Godzilla was the hero in this, because I was thinking of Cloverfield during this.
Yeah.
And I was wondering why.
Well, how could you not, given one of the creatures?
A lot of the destruction in this movie was, again, affecting me a little bit, only because I went into it expecting more fun, and as buildings are coming down and millions of people are dying, I'm like, I'm having a hard time having fun. Mm-hmm. And then I'm thinking about Cloverfield. Well, it was okay in Cloverfield. Oh, right, different context. It's a horror movie. When lots of people die in that movie, I think, of course, it's a horror movie. This, I went in expecting fun summer movie, mm-hmm, and it's not because all these people are dying. So there's a disconnect there. But I want to talk about Godzilla himself. Like Ken Watanabe says that Godzilla is there to keep this in balance,
yeah,
and let him fight. And let him fight could be, let them fight could be a great line that would like catch on all summer and we'd all be running around going, let them fight, you know, but we're not going
if
to.
If then you show us.
Because the movie's not that good.
A lengthy fight.
I feel like there's two schools of thought real quick.
Let them fight, but don't let them fight.
But not too much.
Yeah. I'm trying to understand my relationship to this movie because, again, like I said, it's so polarizing already. I think there are some people, maybe kind of movie snob types, which isn't I'm not saying that as a pejorative, but who are maybe reacting to the fact that it does go against so many of the sort of traditional models of this kind of a movie, right? Sure. And they're digging it for that reason.
This is the Ang Lee Hulk of Godzilla movies.
Sort of, yeah.
Right. That what I like about these films is fun, and the fun has been taken out of it.
But these people are maybe responding to that. I think there are other people who are really just reacting to the last 15 minutes and coming out saying, that was a blast, because...
Yeah.
The last 15 minutes are the fight, and that's the fun part,
and
ignoring the first hour 45.
Or that the blast should be longer as a blast, as a fight.
I don't want to, I just want to comment on when you were talking about the mass destruction of the buildings.
It's expected in a Godzilla movie. Too uptight.
But
it's so 9/11 was like...
Did this just bother me from like an idiocy perspective? Because there's a shot that could have very easily been taken out, but the fact that it's there makes me think that it's just a stupid movie. There's no electricity, presumably, in most of San Francisco, but they show a shot of people working in an office.
Well, that...
There's monsters fucking destroying the entire city, but this conference call needs
to
happen.
Those TPS reports are not going to finish themselves.
I can't. I'm out of work from home days. I'm out of work.
If one of
Joanne used up the sick bank.
If one of the things about the creatures is that they cause this electromagnetic...
So file folders if you can't email.
If one of the things about the creatures is that they cause this electromagnetic pulse, I would argue that the film then shoots themselves in the foot again. I thought that was sort of interesting. But then when they're on the train with the little kid, he says, no, you just have to wait 10 minutes. And then 10 minutes later, the electricity goes back on. So what is this? Oh, these monsters inconvenience us.
I just got a tweet from Susan. We can't go to the sushi place for lunch on Market Street because Godzilla just stepped on it.
I think it seems like...
go to the other sushi place, which we don't like as much.
I should have brown bagged it.
It seems like Gareth Edwards is trying to make a movie.
That's the quote on the poster. Gareth Edwards is trying to make a movie.
The sequel is going to be called Godzilla, The Inconvenience.
All the 9/11 stuff is to be expected because it's a Godzilla movie, and now when we see destruction, we immediately think of 9/11. I just felt like in Cloverfield, it made sense to me because that's a horror movie, and in this, it's like, enough 9/11 Hollywood.
Yeah.
It seems like he's really trying to make a movie that's more about, again, our response to this thing. In the way, I thought of Contagion, the Soderbergh movie.
Mm-hmm.
And what a good job that does of telling a story where, you know, the disease is Godzilla, and here's the way that all of these different people react, and here's what they do. And there, you could do that. Again, it would deny us monster
fighting. But in Contagion, all of those subplots were compelling.
Exactly.
We kept leapfrogging to them. We didn't stay on one like we stay on four.
And that's why this movie fails, I think, is because it tries to take this approach. Fine. Denies me Godzilla fighting. Okay, I'm not thrilled, but you could still work. If all that shit is compelling, it is not.
Also, speaking of Godzilla, before I forget.
Weird.
No, go ahead. I promised I would.
I was just going to say, I think part of what they could have done to solve a lot of the problems of this movie is, I would argue that of the first hour and a half, 75% of it is extraneous.
Yeah.
One thing that's a great part about a lot of the more campy Godzilla movies, which are the ones that I tend to enjoy, and that's probably why I'm reacting the way that I am. It's not the type of Godzilla movie that I like, although I do like the 54 original.
It's just a very different vibe.
It's very somber,
yes.
But it has a theme, which I appreciate.
And it has a monster we see after 22 minutes.
Yes. If you would have made this movie 80 minutes, and you didn't show Godzilla for 40 minutes, if you want to play that waiting game, but like you made us wait a little bit less because the movie is shorter, I think it could have worked.
I'm wondering why we need the prologue at all, except to establish that his parents loved him. It features the trope of people running away from the smoke.
Yeah, that's how it works.
And that's in a lot of films that you have to outrun something that, according to the laws of physics, you can't outrun. But be that as it may, before I forget, Godzilla's face.
Yeah.
I didn't like.
Okay.
And I began to wonder.
He's got Toho face, though, so, like, what's the problem?
Is he's what?
He's got Toho
face. No, not at all.
No?
I began to wonder if Toho holds that copyright so dear that it wasn't Emmerich and company reimagining it. It's that Toho will not let you do that face. Because the Godzilla and the Matthew Broderick one looked way different.
Yeah, and I think that was them reimagining it.
This was closer to the Toho original, yes. But in my opinion, and I love Godzilla, it wasn't close enough. Yeah. It looked like the Toho Godzilla with Botox. It looked bloated, kind of boxy.
He's had some work done. The look and design of Godzilla did not bother me at all, especially coming off of the Emmerich Godzilla, where they kind of ruined it, and it's like, no, we care about this. Well, we're trying to be faithful.
The other problem I had, and at this point my wife concludes I'm a lunatic, in this version they show him in the water a lot.
Yes.
Swimming.
Yes.
Yeah. With just the what are those called?
Yeah, the
scales.
Yeah.
The back fins, right?
Yeah.
The spikes. And given what they show coming out of the water, because there's nothing on the screen to entertain me, I'm trying to entertain myself. I'm trying to imagine what the rest of Godzilla looks like under the water.
Yeah.
And he's kind of dog paddling. And it's silly. Because in the Toho films, he kind of walks.
Right.
I thought it was through the water. When they were saying like it's 350 feet and everything like that, I thought it was kind of cool. One thing I'll give the movie credit for is I thought it was kind of cool. Some of the stuff that they showed to the scale of the monsters in comparison to how small like an aircraft carrier is compared to the Godzilla in the water. I appreciated that, but like you were saying earlier, Patrick, it's just you got to pay those things off later, and it's just too abbreviated, so you're left feeling gypped.
They build up Godzilla, you know, by not showing him, and then they show little pieces. Okay, fine. I just felt like when he finally did show up, it all felt sort of anticlimactic. It was just like, oh right, and there's this other thing, and I guess because we already knew that Godzilla existed, no one is surprised or
awed.
Yeah,
there's no sense of awe.
I don't understand the relationship that humans have to Godzilla. It's way more about the Mudos than it is. Godzilla's just this other thing that shows up. Like,
what's with the soldier who goes like, I guess we're monster fighters now?
That guy had 4 awful lines, and I was really happy when he was killed off, because he was the attempt at like the comic relief, and he was awful.
That was supposed to be comic relief?
He had like 4 garbage lines and then died, and it was...
This observation is not original to me. This comes from my wife, but it really gets to the heart of what's wrong with the film. All of the other soldiers are interchangeable.
Yeah.
And it's certainly within a movie's ability to make them separate people who are different that we might care about. Besides the shot where Godzilla... I've taken to calling that shot, how about a little fire scarecrow, where Godzilla vomits the radiation into the Muto's mouth. There was one other shot that I thought got to the heart of what this film could have been if it had been made by people who knew what they were doing.
Okay.
We're fighting the monsters, and it's not going well, and we've established that the Mutos send out this electromagnetic pulse. It's when we're on the bridge, and we're watching the monsters start to fight, and suddenly those planes start falling out of the sky.
Yeah.
That was a cool shot.
Yeah.
That was really disturbing, because earlier, I think the wife sees a guy parachuting down.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, the planes start coming down.
Yeah.
That sense of awe and dread, which we talked about this, I think, last week.
In response to the trailer.
That this idea that something is going on out there, and it's horrible, and it's coming this way. That maybe that's what they were attempting to do by backgrounding so much of the monsters, but in this film it didn't work.
And that's one of the things that I liked so much about the trailer, and I thought it was a marketing technique to obscure the things that they didn't want to show you yet. So we get a look of Godzilla as the back of the carrier closes, and that you barely see it, and then
it turns out it wasn't a marketing
technique.
That's
the movie.
It's the operating principle of the film.
It absolutely is.
Can you... All right. What I have... a tendency to direct movies in my head when they're not working for me in a theater.
Which we're all doing, I think, with this movie.
Yeah. Can you imagine how amazing it would have been if they opened the movie with the parachute drop? You drop down, you go past Godzilla's face, like in that parachute drop when Aaron Taylor Johnson's landing to the ground. You got Godzilla out of the way, your first sighting of him in the first 3 minutes of the movie, and then you're in the midst of the shit. Can you imagine how great of an opening that would be?
Yeah. It's almost become almost a cliche unto itself is an anti-cliche that in 2014, really good movies start in the middle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Start in the middle. But again, what does this film do? There's this guy who is very heroic. Let's take a look at his folks.
Yeah.
It's that Star Wars thing. Do you like Darth Vader? Do you want to see him as a little kid? No.
Check out this 14-year-old boy my dad's married to. He looks like Juliette Binoche.
I couldn't shake the feeling that Godzilla seemed incidental, that everything that the humans are reacting to is the Mudos. And I just felt like, have Godzilla show up first. Have us be afraid of Godzilla.
Yes.
Have us, oh God, what does he want? We've never seen a giant monster before. Ah, and then this other thing shows up. And then Godzilla starts to beat its ass. And then Ken Watanabe says, no, 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 let them fight. And we're like, oh, great, this is the solution. Great. And then Godzilla becomes the hero. And that's how you structure the movie.
One critic wrote that Godzilla is an extra in his own film.
He kind of is.
Yeah.
And not just because he's not in it that much.
Because of how he's employed.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was convinced that I was going to be alone in this, in my little corner, in my curmudgeonliness. So I went to Rotten Tomatoes, and I read as many of those little capsule reviews with the little splatter thing that I could think of.
Those are the good ones, right?
Well, no, this is interesting.
The splatter was
a red. The green splatter is bad, and a red tomato is good.
Got it.
It's fresh or something. But here's my point. The critics who hated it came up with very entertaining ways of saying why and how. But even the critics who liked it, their reviews are peppered with criticism.
Sure.
They're acknowledging...
Human characters are flat, story doesn't work, but when it delivers, you know?
For 5 minutes.
Well, I feel like they just... There's a certain sub... And you're not wrong if you feel this way, and I'm jealous of you if you feel this way. There's a certain subsegment of Godzilla fans or movie monster fans who all they care about is he breathes fire. I literally heard this in the lobby. It's like, it was good because he breathed fire. He breathes fire, somebody said Gojira, and there's smashy smashy for like at least a minute. That's all that matters to certain
people.
Then
life has dealt you such a horrible hand that you have lowered your expectations. Oh my God.
But this is prevalent everywhere now.
That's not criticism, that's low self-esteem.
This was the reaction to Amazing Spider-Man. Yeah. It was, well, he looks like he does in the comic, and they did this thing better than I've ever seen them do because it's the closest to the drawing that I like. And we're disregarding things like story and character and pacing and script, the writing.
By the way, I don't have a dog in this fight,
but
last night on cable, they showed Spider-Man 2.
Yes.
Oh my God.
The movie's good.
Mm-hmm. It's better than good. And you're like, why can't?
Right.
Anyway.
Right.
Well, you know what Godzilla and Spider-Man 2 have in common?
What?
Neither plays the Godzilla theme. Even in the end credits. I waited.
Yeah.
I waited.
I have to say, I am a fan, and it's that sort of snot-nosed sense of humor, that in the first Iron Man, when they play the song, it's cool and fun.
Yes.
And I kept waiting for the Blue Oyster Cult song somewhere. Mm-hmm. When we sat down, my wife had a Facebook post. Now we will finally see if nature points up the folly of men.
I would have settled for Come With Me by P. Diddy, and they didn't even play that. Or Heroes by the Wallflowers.
It turns out that nature is pointing up my folly in spending money to watch this.
Have you guys seen Godzilla 2000?
This empty spectacle.
No.
Because I almost rented it, and I'm curious if that will give me my Godzilla Jones for this week.
I remember liking Godzilla 1985.
I don't know.
You're wrong to like it.
Godzilla 2000. Let's stay on the task.
I actually skipped a wedding to see Godzilla 1985.
Are they divorced?
Yeah.
Good.
There are several on Netflix that you can watch right now that will give you your fix. I haven't seen Godzilla 2000. I'm sure I will in the coming weeks because we're on a big kick. But we were all, I think, very, very excited about this movie and disappointed.
Yeah.
I do think Gareth Edwards could have made a really good Godzilla movie. I just think he made a lot of bad choices and... And had a bad script.
The script was dog shit, but the interviews I've read, it's almost like he willingly made a bad movie.
Well, that's what I mean. He deliberately made these choices that, to me, sabotaged.
And he was rewarded because you think they're going to do anything different in the sequel?
No, I think they will because this is the first weekend.
Yeah.
And this is when it's going to make all of its big, like, at least 50% of its money. And then I think it'll die down. And I think they're going to overcompensate. It's going to be like Man of Steel. And the second one, it's going to be nothing but crazy action. And it's going to bludgeon you.
Or they're going to hear, okay, Godzilla is still a brand that people will go see. Mm-hmm. But we're also hearing that people don't like those choices that he made. Critics, public, whatever. So they're going to make a Godzilla movie, but hire a different guy to do it. Hopefully not like that.
And then they're going to get Ben Affleck to play Godzilla.
I would see that.
And they're going to leak pictures of him in the suit. That
guy can do anything.
Yeah.
The quote that I would like on the poster, the cinematic equivalent of a kick in the groin. JB, F this movie.
Anyway, thank you guys very much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Maybe we'll do a show on X-Men. I have no idea. But sorry, Godzilla.
Oh no, there goes Tokyo and my summer.
I want to find out what happened to the Asian kid. He was charismatic.